truly love this movie. I think it's fantastic.
The magic of that moment with this song that you, that has like lived in your heart for 20 years. And you're just like, I can't handle it anymore.
Are you kidding me? No one can hit that note. Why are you hitting that note?
Rapunzel, the lanterns are for you. Like...
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we are back for our third iteration of our composer series. And today we are talking all about Alan Menken.
I have a grievance I would like to air out before we start talking about Alan Menken. We played Psych with some of our friends on Friday night. And the first question was asked, which is, what is Stefania's most useless talent? And to be honest, basically all my talents are useless. I don't really think I have a useful one
true.
In the bunch. I don't have a useful one in the bunch. But Tara was the last person to answer. And I'm going to read out what she wrote.
Oh my God, you took a screenshot? Amazing.
Yeah, I took a screenshot. Doesn't prepare for the podcast. Makes me do the hard research for our composer series episodes. You should know that no one voted for her, okay?
And by research for the podcast, I was really only talking about the composer series. But you came prepared today.
I did. I really nailed today because I was like, I've been called out and now I need to like...
Here's the thing.
Do work.
I spent a lot of time thinking about that question because I was like, Steph has many useful talents. I can't think of any useless talent. And then
every
I was
single
like,
one
oh,
of my talents are useless.
The composer series. I literally just think the only reason why I think of that is our Stephen Schwartz episode. You literally had listened to the songs, which is great because yeah. That's a huge part of it too, but like knew nothing on his life. And I. had to fill in the rest of the details off of like two interviews that I had seen.
I come from feeling, okay? I speak from the heart. I also want to read the winning answer because that was funny. Our friend Ryan said, knows the going rate of all the Broadway stars on Cameo, which I thought was really funny. And I voted for that.
Yeah.
And then the shade that our friend Jake threw me, and he said accounting, which.
Yeah. That was almost like the most truly skill. Shadier than mine.
It's like that was truly shady.
And the only reason that I went shady is because Steph sat there in her little Zoom box and was like, shade me.
I was like, roast me. Okay, we're still talking about this game. I was like, but two of my friends wrote nothing, N-A. And I'm like, again, literally every single talent I have is useless. Like, go off,
the,
okay?
The other one that I was going to put down, but you have since, like, corrected it. And I think a useless talent of yours is pen clicking.
Is that a talent? I didn't click my pen once today. I didn't click my pen once.
It's a talent for you. Okay, let's talk about Alan Menken.
So I think the most interesting thing about Alan Menken is that usually we start these series off with, what was the first time you heard music from this person? And I can speak for myself and maybe you. I don't know if we ever knew a time in our lives without the music of Alan Menken in it.
No, I agree. And I've watched a bunch of interviews in preparation for this. And one that stood out to me was his interview with Kristen Lopez, who obviously did the music for Frozen. And to watch her meet him was kind of like a dream icon sort of moment. And she also kind of said that she's never really had a time in her life where Alan Menken music hasn't existed either. So I feel like many of us are in that boat. And also, no one really writes a melody like Alan Menken. It's really unmatched when you think about it.
Yes. I mean, can we expose the years we were born? Should we just do that? Okay, so I was born in 1993.
And I was born in 1994.
So you know that's like right in the middle of the Disney Renaissance of when they were just releasing these like immediate classic animated films with iconic music more often than not written by Alan Menken with multiple different collaborators. And we'll get into it, but with so many different lyric writers and collaborators. But he was really a through line for so many of those movies that we grew up with.
Yes. And before we get into Disney, just to go back in time a bit, I found it so interesting that he's always been super interested in music, even as a kid. There's a couple interviews I saw where his parents were actually in the interviews and they were saying, you know, he would pick up instruments when he was like 11 years old and he took band throughout schooling. But he didn't go to school for music. He literally was pre-med. He was going to be a dentist because his dad was a dentist and his grandfather was a dentist. And obviously the theme of the dentist comes into play for little Shop of Horrors, but I wonder if it was like, oh, this isn't a stable career, you need to be a doctor.
There's an expectation that he would do this, but his passion always laid somewhere else.
Yeah. And he also never wanted to go into musical theater. He wanted to do pop scores. And I think there's a lot of pop influence in his music now. Mm-hmm. But I really think his musical theater stuff, and I'll say like the Disney musicals I would consider musical theater, it's mm-hmm. amazing. And it's so recognizable. And yeah, songs that we've grown up with our whole life. So let's kick it off with the original collaboration, and that's Howard Ashman and Alan Menken. You just watched Howard. So
I did.
Let's talk a bit about that.
I just had an emotional experience watching Howard yesterday. There was a moment where they were recording Be Our Guest, and Angela Lansbury is singing in the booth, and they were getting excited, being like, this is the take.
Yeah.
And I was crying watching them sing Be Our Guest. Just, you know, a song that we were said, I don't remember ever not knowing that song, not knowing that music, and them creating this magic just from words and sounds. And mm-hmm. then the way that even it looked a lot like Howard had a lot of creative influence, even beyond just the music. With the story and how everything looked, it seemed like it was him and Alan were like very, very involved in the entire movie, not just slotting songs in. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's always been interesting to me, and I think I mentioned this on our Stephen Schwartz episode, but watching that Frozen 2 making of documentary and seeing just how involved Bobby and Kristen Lopez actually were. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think about writing for animated characters in general, because you can't feel those emotions because they're not people. You know what I mean? Like, you can't sit in a room with Belle or the Beast and have a conversation about what you want the sound to sound like.
Everything that's happening on their face is created by another human, you know?
It's, exactly.
Animation is such like a fascinating genre. I was talking, I sent you a quote yesterday that was said in the movie. I think it was Howard who said it. It said, the last great place to do Broadway musicals is animation. And I really kind of agree, because there is a similar way that you as an audience member with animation and with stage musicals kind of accept what's happening in a way that you don't necessarily accept when it's just like a live action movie. Everything can be a little more fantastic, a little weirder, mm-hmm. a little bigger, and you accept it because that's the nature of the genre, the nature of the form is for it to be bigger. And so yeah. you can get away with doing weirder, funner, quirkier stuff than you can in yeah. other genres.
Which maybe is why I have such a problem with these like live animation takes on these classic Disney movies, because to me it's like, it's not broken, please don't fix it, and mm-hmm. it's not the same. It's just not the same.
I have not seen a single one. Does Mirror Mirror count? I think Alan Menken worked on that too. Does Mirror Mirror count?
You mean like the multi-Oscar winning Mirror Mirror?
What did it win costumes?
Didn't win anything.
Didn't win anything.
Not to get into Mirror Mirror, but like Alan Menken did do the music for Mirror Mirror, but yeah. that was such an interesting time in general, because that other one had also come out, like Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yes, which is like very different from Mirror Mirror, the tonally, but, like, totally completely
came
different.
Came out sort of at the yes. exact same time.
Yes, it did, and I also saw that one, so...
We don't need to discuss any of those.
No, we don't. We don't.
Before we completely open the Disney vault, let's talk about a show that we've talked about many times, and that's Little Shop of Horrors, which was it wasn't the first collaboration of
no.
Alan Menken and Howard Ashman.
So it looks like the first collaboration was a musical called God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, which is an adaptation of a Kurt Vonnegut novel. I'm not familiar with it at all, but I don't think it was like super well-reviewed anyway, or mm-hmm. super commercially successful in any case, wasn't making them a lot of money. And I think you can look at the events of that show and draw a straight line into the decisions they make for making Little Shop of Horrors, and the kind of trying to make it commercially viable with the choices they made in Little Shop of Horrors.
I think the beginning of Howard and the Little Shop stuff is so fascinating to learn how that show really got up on its feet. And I don't think that that's something that we had discussed when we talked about the show in general. I mean, 2019 was the year of Little Shop. No, mm-hmm. 2020.
2019. 2020 was the year of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what year are we in right now? 2019 was the year of Little Shop. And
so you saw two productions of it.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw it.
And that at Stratford, you know, we posed with the plant. That was great.
That's true. That's true.
But that show is just, you know, it's a comedy. And it's funny to think that that show, there are parts of the melodies of some of the songs that show up in later projects that Alan Menken did. That seems, even today, I recently watched... Stars in the House did a Suddenly Seymour's episode where Alan was there, and it was Jeremy Jordan and Gideon Glick and Lee Wilcoff and Hunter Foster. And they were all saying that Seymour was the role. Like, that was the role that everybody wanted to play. And I think it's because it's a different role and it challenges you, but also that vocal selection is really nice. It's a nice place for a male vocal. And it's just fun. It's a really fun and kind of crazy show. And in that Stars in the House, he was saying that, like, that was not the tone that they wanted for Little Shop. He played sort of a sample of what the original opening number would have sounded like. And it wasn't like that at all. It was, like, really bright, which I think bright, and we can talk about this a little bit later, but I think, like, bright and floaty and airy is very Alan Menken. Mm-hmm. So to see that he could put those sort of parts into a horror musical, I'll say in quotations, mm-hmm. is really cool to me.
I think what's great about Little Shop is kind of the contrast between the subject of what's happening and the way that they're telling the story. Because I think the music for the, if you're not listening too closely, sounds very fun, very unassuming, just like really happy. But then if you like start listening to the lyrics or paying attention to what's happening on stage, you're like, wait, is this a people eating plant? Are we murdering people? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah.
And I think the contrast is why the show to me is so successful, in that they're able to tell this dark story with this bright, happy kind of melody, but it also feels like gritty. I really think that the way that they wrote, the way that Alan Menken like balanced that in writing Little Shop is really great.
Yeah, and I think the movie version of Little Shop also is very good in that contrast storyline. Again, like you're sort of riding that fine line between horror and comedy, and sometimes it's both. But really, at the end of the day, like, you're not afraid of the people eating plant, even though you should be afraid of it.
The I way just I think screamed.
About, yes.
Like, of joy. When we saw the off-Broadway version and the plant just started descending forward towards us. The way I screamed.
Yeah. I just think it's such a cool production in general, and I also love the fact that it's done so many times in regional ways as well. Mm-hmm. And if you're a high school or college is putting on Little Shop, like, for your director to figure out how you're going to do the plant, it's just fun and so cool. And it's amazing that this show has had such longevity and still hits just as well today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun one because it gives performers a lot of room to interpret what they're doing and have fun with characters. So I think it's great.
Something else that I loved when I watched the Stars in the House interview was that every single person that played Seymour agreed that Feed Me, Get It is the best song and the most fun song to sing, especially that, like, I don't know part. It's just, like, if you think about it, and you don't know the context of the show, if I were to just literally, like, retell the story and be like, yeah, you know, like, this character Seymour is singing this song to a flesh-eating Venus flytrap. You're like, cool.
Sounds weird. Okay.
But yeah, they were just saying that, like, vocally, that song is so, like, in everyone's range. And yeah, I love that song too. I don't know.
And you have such a fun scene partner in a giant puppet.
Yes.
You're alone basically on stage playing off of this giant puppet that is, or actually it's little at that point. Never mind. But
yeah.
Isn't it? But playing off of just this little puppet, and I remember the first time I saw it, the moment the puppet just, like, turned to the audience for the first time, I'm like, this is already the best character in the show. It already has so much personality. It is just, like, the way it just turned to the audience, I'm like, I'm already obsessed. I'm already over, and like, can't get over
it. It's kind of interesting, too, in what I was sort of saying about how, like, a lot of the stuff that he writes is for animation. Although Audrey 2 is not animation, that character, like, the actor is not on stage. So they're playing to, whether they're in the pit or they're backstage or wherever that actor that's playing Audrey 2 might be, the main character is the actual plant. So
right. It is a voiceover performance.
Yeah, you're writing for voiceover once again in this show. And that's was the beginning of his career. And to think that he's done that all throughout the years is super interesting. And maybe he likes it. I don't know.
I mean, as we look at his career, where Alan Menken has been most successful has been in collaboration with Disney and in working with animation, with many different collaborators. But animation has been kind of the bread and butter of his career.
Is it time to open the Disney vault?
I think it's time to open the Disney vault. Are you ready?
I'm ready. We've opened the Disney vault. I feel like we've been waiting many episodes for a chance to wear ears, honestly.
You're right. You're honestly correct.
On a personal note, we love Disney in general, but like one of the best vacations we've ever been on was our Disney trip to Florida. I've never felt so immersed into a world ever. And we were super looking forward to going to Disneyland Paris in 2020, but obviously... Yep. Here we are.
Did that happen?
So what is the first Disney movie in the vault that we're going to talk about?
So the first one that they collaborated on, the first one that came out was The Little Mermaid. It came out in 1989. Watching Howard, it looked like they recruited Howard and he kind of got to pick his collaborator on it and picked Alan. That's how the movie came across to me.
Yeah. I also would say that out of... all of these, I think The Little Mermaid is my favorite.
Interesting. There's three Alan and Howard collaborations at Disney. The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin. I would say those are kind of like the peak of the Disney Renaissance. I mean, Lion King comes in later, a little bit later, and that's there too. But for me, the one that I remember rewatching over and over and over again was Aladdin.
Oh, really? See, I was... Mm-hmm. This is so interesting because I feel like Little Mermaid was one that was like a repeat at my house all the time. Lion King for sure was like really one. And I didn't watch Aladdin until like later in life.
Really? No, for some reason, Aladdin is very vivid to me.
I do like the Aladdin songs. I also, as we've said on other episodes, like we worked at a summer camp and the year before... we worked together. I had worked there and we did Aladdin. So I've done productions of Aladdin, but I don't know why the movie wasn't one that just like stuck out to me. I really think I was like so obsessed with Little Mermaid that was it. That was the only one I wanted to watch. Yeah. I mean, I used to sit in my backyard. We used to have like a swing set. This is like such a funny story and random, but we had a swing set and I would... sit there and sing Disney songs. This was like when I was a bit older. And we used to have these voles that lived under the deck. And when I sang Part of Your World, they would come out of the deck. I was literally Snow White. Like, this is real life Snow White. And I'm pretty sure we caught them after they came out from me singing. But like, Part of Your World is... one of my favorite songs. The first time I ever sang it was like... We had a medieval festival in grade 4, and my talent was singing, and I chose to sing Part of Your World in grade 4. I've also put on a production of The Little Mermaid. I helped put on a production of The Little Mermaid, so I really do love that movie, and I think that is the perfect example of what I was saying about music being bright and floaty and airy. Mm-hmm. The beginning theme, and Alan Menken loves a theme, and he's really good at a theme. They're like, da-na-na-na-na-na-na. It's just like, it's so good, and it's so recognizable and so memorable that, yeah, I just think Little Mermaid is up here.
Flipping your fins, you don't get too far. Legs are required for jumping, dancing, strolling along down a... what's that word again? Street. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun, wandering free. Wish I could be part of that world.
And I hadn't seen it in such a long time, but then when they did The Little Mermaid live on ABC as A Wonderful World of Disney, half of it was the movie, and I was struck by how good it is.
Yeah, it's really good.
You forget how good it is, or you forget, I don't know, I hadn't seen it in so long, and it's easy to just kind of remember moments or just kind of classify animated movies kind of all as one thing because they're associated with your childhood, but then to watch it as an adult and to see it, the movie was like 10 times better than whatever they were doing live action on stage. And yep. It was just like, oh, now this is just making me want to watch this movie again, not this musical.
I mean, this was literally, a quote from this movie was literally kind of brought up very recently in pop culture. Meghan Markle just used it in talking to Oprah about losing your voice.
It is kind of a universal story. I mean, it's very specific to Meghan's situation, but it is kind of this story of about being like having to give up for love or for what you want, and whether that's, I don't know. Obviously, like, Ursula is a true villain in this story. A great villain. One of the best.
We love Ursula.
Ursula is an icon. Ursula is an icon. But truly one of the best villains. But Ariel, sacrificed herself maybe for someone else in maybe a way that she shouldn't have. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to watch, especially as a child.
I also just think about that ride at Disney World and how it's literally just a very generic dark ride, but it's so fun and great.
The under the sea room where you're in like a giant like clam shell basically.
Yeah.
We were like three of us squished in this clam shell.
It's supposed to be a parent and a toddler in that little clam shell. I know, not three adults.
We're like small women.
Yeah, we're small.
When we wrote it at like 1 a.m, we should have all just taken our own clamshell.
Yeah, we
should've. That's like the biggest regret I have from that trip to Disney World, not being in my own clamshell at 1 a.m. on the Little Mermaid ride. No, but the under the sea room where
it's
you're
amazing.
Just surrounded by all these tiny like animatronic animals, like under the sea creatures dancing, singing. It's amazing.
It is because think about the evolution of the animatronic, right? And to think that what they had for that ride, which is like a very early, that was made like pretty early when Disney World opened, the Ursula animatronic is amazing. She's huge. But then I also think about the Little Mermaid, whatever it's called, at Hollywood Studios, the kind of show.
Is that still open? Did it close? Is it still there?
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's closed right now.
Well, aren't they all?
But I don't think. I think it might still be that. It's called Voyage of the Little Mermaid. I think that's what it's called.
Maybe.
But it's literally like a live action performance and it's pretty great.
Ursula is an animatronic though, who is great.
Yes. And the Ariel, like the tail is kind of attached to the set. So whoever the actress is.
It's like a human girl.
Just like,
with like a plastic
slips in.
Tail.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think, in terms of songs, obviously Part of Your World is amazing. It's a song that everybody knows. Everybody's sung
to think,
everything.
To think it almost was cut from this movie. And
I
Howard
know.
Was like, over my dead body, will it be cut?
Yes. And then, I mean, like, Under the Sea is just your classic, like, that's Sebastian.
That's what won the Oscar, Under the Sea, which I think is correct. Like, Part of Your World is amazing, but Under the Sea is, like, a masterpiece. It's wonderful.
Under the sea, under the sea, wind is a
but then they also won for original score, right?
I believe so. Alan Menken has 8 Oscars. Did you know that? 8.
Yes, and let me read this so
he's
that I get
EGOT.
It right.
Sorry.
But he's only recently an EGOT.
Yes,
but
the 2020
it says,
EGOT.
According to Wikipedia, which, as we know, our most reliable source out there, with 8 Academy Awards, Menken is the second most prolific Oscar winner in the music categories after Alfred Newman, who has 9 Oscars. He also has won 11 Grammy Awards, a Tony Award, and most recently, a Daytime Emmy.
Me asking my mom, do you think Daytime Emmys count for EGOTs? I think they do, but...
They do, because Emmy is in there, but I don't know that it feels the same, you know?
You're right, you're right. But I do think a lot of EGOTs do come from daytime Emmys, if we're being honest.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, Kiss the Girl is super fun, but then I also, I know this comes, like, way later down, but while we're talking about Little Mermaid, the musical that obviously was not super successful, there are some amazing songs in there, too. I love She's in Love so much. The song that Flounder sings. And I think it could have perfectly fit into the movie. The movie actually could be missing a Flounder song. I mean, let's go back all of these years and tell them that they should add a Flounder song. But, you know, Sierra Bogus played Ariel on Broadway, and she's amazing. She's stunning. And to hear her sing these songs like that, I love it. And the Heelys. The Heelys are amazing.
Interesting. We're getting a new Little Mermaid live action adaptation. Will I watch it? Yes. Honestly, probably not.
You're not going to... I feel like that is one that you would watch because, like, Lin's involved.
Right. So I was going to say, collaborating with Mengen on this is Lin-Manuel Miranda. And it's starring... Is it Halle Bailey? Chloe Bailey?
Yes.
One of the sisters.
I think Halle.
Halle. Yeah. Jacob Tremblay as Flounder.
David Diggs as Sebastian, like, that's a great
one. Correct. Who is it? Melissa McCarthy as Ursula?
As Ursula, yeah.
That's questionable. I don't know. I'm concerned.
Yeah.
but I think, who's playing?
Oh, and also, Javier Bardem. That's great casting. That's great casting.
He does look kind of like King Triton, like very very giant, and then like the girl playing Ariel is like tiny, like so little.
I mean, like we just said with the live actions, I will have many question marks beside it even before it comes out, just because, again, doesn't need to be done. But I feel like because I love this animated one so much, this will be one that I would watch before I watch, like, Aladdin.
Interesting. I mean, I've never seen Aladdin, and I don't need to see Aladdin, even though someone from my university starred
Ryerson.
As Aladdin. A Ryerson alum starred as Aladdin. I don't need to ever watch it. Sorry.
Mina Masood, shout out.
Mina Masood, shout out to him.
Yeah. That was actually exciting. He came into where I work to do an interview for Aladdin because, I mean, that was like a really exciting time that someone from Toronto was cast as this iconic character.
Didn't he work at like El Catrin or something? This is very Toronto. He worked as a bartender at a famous
Taco.
Mexican restaurant in Toronto.
Yeah.
In Toronto. But we haven't even talked here about Beauty and the Beast.
No.
Another Menken-Ashman collaboration.
Which this was also one that, like, again, I think I had watched it when I was young, obviously, but it wasn't one that had, like, stuck out to me. I was in a production of Beauty and the Beast. I had a shout out to Summerstock, which does not exist anymore. I was Mrs. Potts. Actually, that...
You were Miss Lansbury.
I sang Beauty and the Beast. It was a really, like, important moment in my life. But I wore a hula hoop skirt to mimic the teapot.
The teapot?
It was literally,
so
like, a piece of fabric that had a hula hoop in it so that it looked like it was a pot,
like
which
a
is a great idea for a Halloween costume, everybody. No, I think those songs are amazing. And to talk about what you were saying with Angela Lansbury and like watching them sing Be Our Guest, I saw an interview where Alan Menken was talking about the song Beauty and the Beast. And Angela Lansbury is like one take wonder, according to Alan Menken. They literally just put her in the booth and are like, just give us first sound so that we can get the orchestra. And she sang it all the way through and they're like, I guess we're done. Thanks.
I guess that's the take. No, she has this such like warm quality to her voice.
Tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Can I tell like a very side note anecdote? So every night we call my grandparents on the phone. I talk to my nonna. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And she's like, oh, we're watching Mrs. Fletcher on the TV. My grandparents are obsessed with Murder, She Wrote right now. Like, every night I call
amazing.
Them, they're watching Murder, She Wrote. My no-no loves Murder, She Wrote.
I actually saw the iconic Angela Lansbury in a Mervis show. She was in Blythe Spirit.
Blythe Spirit.
That show, I didn't care for, but Angela Lansbury is a legend.
An icon. No. To watch her in the recording booth was, like, such a gift. And then I was reminded of, I think it's in Tokyo Disney,
the new Beauty and the Beast ride
with The Be Our Guest room, well, the final room where Beauty and the Beast, the song Beauty and the Beast is playing, where they're just like dancing and you're spinning around them in your teacups. But to me, the most amazing room is the Be Our Guest room. They're like, you're in there, the table has things set, then they like flip you around and then they flip you back around and the table has like transformed into a bunch of different things on it. It's crazy. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
I want to go. It is. Also, hearing everything in Japanese, great.
Yes, it's so exciting. There's a video I'll put in the description for our YouTube listeners. It's kind of like a behind the scenes of how they made these animatronics. It's fascinating. Also, like animatronics in today's world, crazy what they can do. It's outrageous.
I think about the, well, he's like human at this point, but Belle and the Beast dancing in her iconic yellow dress in that room at the end of that ride. And you... It looks like they're floating. It looks like they're just dancing around them. You don't see the mechanism of... And I just... The first time I saw a clip of it, I was like, I need to be in this room. It's magical. And part of me, like, to think about these songs written 30 years ago at this point, and especially after watching Howard, and, you know, obviously we'll
talk
about... This
was the most emotional part, I feel, of the documentary.
Yes. You know, like, he didn't get to see Beauty and the Beast released, and he didn't. He only half worked on Aladdin. Like, Tim Rice had to come take over writing lyrics for Aladdin. So he didn't, he only really saw Little Mermaid get released. But to know that these movies are still, like, so important to children growing up and have still, like, you know, you go to the parks and you can see the Beauty and the Beast show, or you go into the Little Mermaid ride.
You can go to the restaurant.
Yes, like, you can meet the characters, and it's still these things that they were creating 30 years ago in, like, a conference room has, like, the way it has grown and just the way people love what they've created, what they've written is like, magical.
Yeah, this is also a two-time Oscar-winning movie. It was Beauty and the Beast that won, right?
I think it's Beauty and the Beast. You're right, you're right. It's Beauty and the Beast. This is also, I believe, Beauty and the Beast was, like, the first animated picture nominated for Best Picture.
Beauty and
the Beast was one of the five Best Picture nominees. So that's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because they just don't nominate animated movies in that category.
I think we also need to talk about the, I believe it was the credit song in the original animated movie, but the take of Beauty and the Beast sung by Celine Dion and Peebo Bryson, because
you're
that
right.
version
That's the one.
Is everything.
That's the one. The way Celine's voice just, like, I can't even do it.
Only Celine, but
this is a pre-Titanic Celine.
Yes, and that version is so good. I love it so much. And yeah, it's really held up over the years, I think. I mean, her voice is iconic, so.
Yes, it's so recognizable. For the new live action one they did, it was Ariana Grande and John Legend. Which,
yes.
Fine, but I taught dance before this pandemic to, like, little three-year-olds, and we play this music all the time, and I used the John Legend Ariana Grande version for, like, our end of session recital performance dance.
Because, you know, those kids have no idea who Celine even is.
No, they do not appreciate Celine, okay? They were born in the year 2016. They don't know who Celine is, okay? But I also, I play Part of Your World literally every single class. Every single class we play Part of Your World at least once. I don't even know if you know it, but I play it.
Where's the Celine Dion jukebox musical? Because I think it should happen.
You're right. Where is it?
Even all the way up to her, not like super, super recent, because I've kind of fell off the Celine train, but like Taking
Chances.
What do
you say to Taking Chances? What do you say? Yeah.
Legendary. That song's amazing. But just to keep on the Beauty and the Beast train a bit, another one that was on Broadway. I didn't realize that the show was on Broadway for 13 years. Like,
it ran
what
for a
crazy
long time.
That's a huge accomplishment.
It did really run for a long time.
And as I was researching this, Beauty and the Beast has played in Toronto many times. I saw it, like maybe 5 years ago here, a tour ran through. Sure. But it was first here in 1995. Are you aware of that cast?
I think I am, but go on.
So, Carrie Butler was Belle.
Yes.
Dan Shamroy was Gaston.
I knew that, yes. Iconic.
Cliff Saunders, who was in Les Mis, he was Thénardier, he was LeFou. Yeah. Just thinking of like those two together would have been comic gold.
A fantastic collab. A fantastic collab.
And legendary, but Chip was Noah Reed. Patrick from Schitt's Creek.
Oh my God.
Isn't that adorable?
That's really cute. That's really cute.
There are no there's like
it was on a bootleg time.
No, there's not a, no, but there was like a CBC cameras in the theater bowing like on the news video.
Wow.
But it's really far back. Oh my God, wait, the Beast, I don't know who he is.
So you're not
Chuck
recognizing
Wagner.
Noah Reed?
Chuck you're Wagner was the Beast, but like I don't know who
sure.
he is.
Okay.
No, I didn't recognize Noah Reed. There was no close up on Chip, but I feel like if like I saw a close up picture, I think he has the same face.
He has a baby face now even, so I can definitely imagine.
But so I will say that the song Human Again was cut from the movie. It's in the musical. But also the song Home, which I love Home. I think it's such a beautiful song sung by Belle. And yeah, I mean, they do really great magic in that musical on stage. You know, like the wardrobe and Be Our Guest is always an iconic moment wherever it is seen. But moving on to the final Howard Ashman, Alan Menken collab is Aladdin, which we have mentioned. Also won two Oscars, A Whole New World. And I think they won a score. But I watched an interview where Alan Menken, because Tim Rice came in to write the end of this score. And I saw an interview that Alan Menken said that A Whole New World was inspired by Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. It's like kind of the same instrumental.
Yeah, because Tim Rice obviously an Andrew Lloyd Webber collaborator, right?
Yeah, which was kind of cool to me.
That is interesting. A Whole New World, I just remember, because we worked at summer camp, and at those places, Disney music is everywhere. And we played a game once where our camp director would name a song, usually a Disney song, and we'd have to write down as many lyrics as we could remember. And they named A Whole New World. And I was always the counselor for the littlest age group. So I always had like 6 and 7 year olds. And that was the youngest of the camp. And literally the 6-year-old recited the entirety of A Whole New World to me. And I was like, okay, girl, go off.
It's just like, I think in the same boat as like Part of Your World, it is so iconic. I think truly, when you think about the Disney musicals, A Whole New World, Beauty and the Beast, and Part of Your World, I feel like are kind of top three.
Those kind of slow ballads are the ones that became kind of the anthems for the musical outside of it, because they can translate outside. Beauty and the Beast is one that's like weird because Beauty, like, why does that translate outside? But
it's also like right out at the very, very end of the movie. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's like a summary. But it's a summary of what's happened.
But the theming is throughout the whole thing. They're like, da-da-da-da-da, right? And it's the same thing with A Whole New World. Like the theming is throughout the whole movie.
Yes.
It's just so good.
They're kind of each exposing each other to a whole new world in Aladdin. I also think a huge part of why A Whole New World hits is because of the imagery of that song, of the carpet.
A whole new world, that's where we'll be.
That's where we'll be.
A thrilling chase,
a wondrous place for you and me.
And then I remember seeing Aladdin, the stage production here in Toronto, and when that carpet went up, I was meh on the stage production. It was the out of town, so I think a lot did end up changing before it went to Broadway. I never saw it on Broadway. But the most memorable moment is when that carpet goes up and you're just thinking, how are they doing this? Because they were making it very clear by bringing stuff under the carpet and over the carpet, letting you know there's no strings, guys. Like, this carpet is flying. I remember they just like, put the planets around it. I was like, well, how are they holding this thing up? The magic of that moment with this song that has like lived in your heart for 20 years. You're just like, I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah. I also love for that stage production, this was a song I believe was supposed to be in the movie, but it was cut. Proud of Your Boy that Aladdin sings.
But I'll get over these lousing up, messing up, screwing up times. You'll see, ma, now comes the better part. Someone's gonna make good, cross your stupid heart. Make good and finally make you proud of your boy.
It's very Santa Fe, which we'll talk about Newsies in a little bit. It's kind of the same intonation and like theming. Yeah, I mean, Friend Like Me was a scene that I think was really great on stage two, even though, again, we have said on other episodes, I also did not love the Toronto production. I saw it very early, so there were issues that they were working out during my production, specifically during Friend Like Me and the magic portion of it. But I believe the rumor is that they have filmed the West End version of Aladdin and it will be released on Disney Plus.
You're right. You're 100% right. I want to see what they've done because when we saw it, we don't meet the genie until Friend Like Me. But yes. I believe the Broadway version and the West End version, genie is like right from the top, right from the jump.
I think the first person to meet. Does he not sing Arabian Nights?
Yeah, he sings Arabian Nights.
Yeah. Which I also think that this was a movie that it took you to a different, like, you're not going under the sea and you're not going to like whatever kingdom Beauty and the Beast is. Like, you're literally going, I mean, Agrabah is not a real place, but
right, but it was inspired by real places. And
yeah, you're going like across the world to a different place and like meeting all of these different people. And that was something that they obviously try to do a lot more of that now with Disney and you know, the evolution of these movies. But it's a beautiful movie. It's so colorful and amazing.
Yes.
And the characters sing really great songs. I mean, like, Jafar, an amazing villain. So there's a lot to this movie.
The best
movie.
Villain. Iago.
Yes.
The best sidekick. To me, a song that I think is underrated from Aladdin is Prince Ali. Just the way it builds and builds. And the way it's animated, the way we're introducing him and seeing all the, like, so much of Aladdin becoming a prince. And I think it's such a good song. I mean, so Friend Like Me obviously has that magic energy and the vocal performance from Robin Williams.
Mr. Aladdin, sir, have a job, two or three. I'm on the job, you big nabob. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend. Had a friend like me.
Which I think is so important to the movie of Aladdin. Aladdin, to me, Aladdin is my favorite of these three.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like this is one that I need to see again.
Also, I love Jasmine. Yeah. That's maybe also it.
But see, the biggest problem that I had with the musical was Jasmine.
Yeah, that was bad. What was her song that she sang? I think it was cut for Broadway, but we got to see it, obviously. What was it called?
It was cut for Broadway. I believe it was called Call Me a Princess. If it wasn't called Call Me a Princess, she did say those lyrics. And it was literally
Don't Call Me a Princess, maybe?
Maybe. It was literally like her in her bedroom singing this like snobby song. And I hated it.
It was bad. It was really bad. It was really bad. But then in the movie, what was her thing called? Speechless?
The new movie?
Yeah.
Yes, Speechless, written by Alan Menken and Pasek and Paul.
The Pasek and Paul collaboration. Yeah, again, we didn't need that either, to be honest.
No. Yeah, it's interesting. And I don't know that movie needed to be redone. But I also think about the fact that, like, these movies, these animated movies have, like, 1.5 and 2. And I've never seen any of those. Like, Little Mermaid, 1.5.
I know. I've never seen any of those. I want to shout out another podcast, a podcast that I love. It's called Blank Check, and currently at the time of recording they're doing a series, so they take directors and they do their entire filmography from the beginning to end, and they're currently doing Musker and Clements, who directed Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Hercules, which we'll get to, and a bunch of Disney stuff. And I really loved the way they talked about how animation evolved from that era to now. Like, the most recent episode they released was Princess and the Frog, because that was directed by them as well. And just the way animation has evolved, hand-drawn animation specifically. They talk about Howard and Alan and the way that the music was working. And so I would highly recommend that podcast. And I love specifically the episodes on Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and Hercules. Hercules with Larry Owens, too. So you can't go wrong.
We love Larry Owens.
We love Larry Owens. So obviously, after Howard Ashman tragically died while in production for Aladdin, Alan Menken was continuing to work with Disney and kind of worked with many different people in collaboration with Disney. So with his most frequent collaborator was Stephen Schwartz, because he did Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame, and then Enchanted much later.
Mm-hmm.
But then talk about Glenn Slater, who is a very frequent collaborator of Alan Menken, where he worked on with Tangled, we have David Zippel, who he worked on with Hercules, and obviously the iconic Newsies with Jack Feldman.
To stick on the timeline, we're heading to 1992, where we still weren't born yet, but Newsies, the movie, starring none other than Batman himself, Christian Bale.
Okay, so I watched the movie Newsies for the first time yesterday. We had a difficult time finding it on Disney Plus. It was classified. I searched Newsies in the search bar, and only the filmed version with Jeremy Jordan came up. So I started watching that, and then I texted you. I'm like, I couldn't find Newsies. And you're like, it's here, and you sent me the link. And we realized what the problem was. On my Disney Plus, probably due to a computer setting, it's called The Newsboys, which truly just cracked me up for, like...
Which, according to my brother Corey, was the original title of Anchorman.
The Newsboys? Okay.
Yes.
Well, I don't think The Newsboys is... I don't think Anchorman is on Disney Plus, so I don't think the...
With the recent purchase of Star, it might actually be on Disney Plus. No, there was no confusion there. But the confusion for us was that Steph is using my Disney Plus account, so I don't understand.
Expose me, okay?
No, yeah, it's like it's so strange. But yeah, so we, us and Shara have seen the Newsies filmed stage production. We actually saw it in theaters, however many years ago that was. And I recently watched it last year. So let's start with the movie, because that's obviously where this all came to be. But I mean, I think before we even get into either of them, the thing that elevated the musical was the addition of the character Catherine Plummer.
Yeah, I think the character of Catherine Plummer, having a female character, having agency, and also it's a great narrative structure to have a reporter, because she's giving you information. I think that's so smart. Like, the love interest as Davy's sister in the movie was truly not necessary. Truly not.
So what is your overall thoughts of the Newsies Christian Bale movie?
Okay, so I was very aware of the fact that Christian Bale was trapped into this movie, that he signed on to make a drama, and then somewhere along the lines it became a movie musical, and this boy could not get out. And the first time he danced in Carrying the Banner, I was watching in my kitchen with my mom, and I'm just like, Mom, look at him. And we were just cracking up. He committed
He's
to
also,
every moment.
Like, how old is he in that?
He was like 17 years old. He was 18 when that movie came out,
but he really looks 12.
He's so cute there. He was so cute in it. Adorable. Christian Bale. It wasn't that long before Little Women, where he kind of looks the same, but he has some like facial hair going on in certain points of Little Women, so he looks a little bit older. But it's kind of that Christian Bale vibes, like just adorable face.
Cute,
Christian Bale.
Yeah.
He's mostly good in it. Sometimes when he sings, I was just like, oh, honey. The dance solo in Santa Fe cracked me up. Could not get over it. I think... honestly, I felt the movie was a bit long. It could have been cut. It could have been cut down. Really could have
I'm
been
sure.
It was 2 hours.
I have not seen the full movie. I've obviously seen every single Christian Bale singing scene. Yeah. Christian Bale is a huge actor in my household. My brother loves the new Batman. I mean, we all love the new Batmans. They're really great. But I was saying to you yesterday that this is probably one of the only movies that his young daughters can watch, because they're not going to watch American Psycho. They're not going to watch The Machinist. They're probably not going to watch Batman yet. So this was probably like, oh, look, Dad's singing in a musical.
I don't think Christian Bale would ever allow this movie to be played in his house. Sorry, I don't.
Really? You think he hates
not
it that much?
Happen. I do. I really do. I really feel that way. That he,
but like, what,
like,
a pivotal moment in his life.
It was. It was a pretty big movie for him to do. He probably worked really hard on every single moment of this dancing.
Yeah. Directed iconically by Kenny Ortega.
Kenny Ortega really did that, and we don't
deserve
Kenny Ortega. We don't give Kenny Ortega the credit he deserves. Because
no, we never do.
Did it all for us, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll do an episode on Kenny Ortega.
Oh, wow. Well, I would love to. I really, like, I was saying this to you yesterday. Many of the movies that I love are from Kenny Ortega. He's great. An icon.
He just knows how to direct a musical sequence.
Has he ever done a stage musical?
That's a really good question. Has Kenny Ortega ever done a stage musical?
Because if he hasn't, like, get on that. We're very off topic now, but I'm thinking of the behind the scenes of the High School Musical movies and Kenny really dancing with that cast. I feel like he can do this.
Yes. I don't think he's done stage musicals.
All right. Well, I'm saying it right now. The campaign is on for Kenny Ortega to direct a stage musical. We're ready for it.
We are ready for it. This is a very, very off topic, but when I was dancing, this was around the time, obviously, Michael Jackson died and his tour was canceled, and there was a dancer on his tour from Toronto, and he came to our dance studio to, like, talk to us and just, like, teach us a little bit of the music and stuff, and just he talked a bit about Kenny and how great he was to work with, and that was kind of, that was cool. I was, like, 16. Yeah. It was very cool.
It's, like, 6 degrees of separation from Kenny Ortega means everything. yeah, but something else that you had said was, like, your main critique of this movie was that there wasn't enough music.
Yeah, for sure. There's, I think a lot of times, even in these Disney movies, though they're a bit shorter, these animated movies, they run out of music 2/3 of the way through. And the end is just, like, all dialogue, action, scenes. But it's like, if this is a musical, I want the resolution of the story to be in music form. Because I've been on this musical journey, and now we need to finish this musical journey. So,
whereas I think the stage version, like, the music is really great. Newsies is a show that I saw here, I don't even know what year, but it's always one that we talk about that it's obviously a boy-heavy cast, and the dancing is incredible, but also
that was
the
harmonies. Chris Catelli.
And I want to talk about that original cast a bit, because there are so many people that we love in it. First of all, Newsies was nominated for 8 Tony Awards. It won 2, Best Choreography, which is well-deserved, specifically for Seize the Day. If you have not seen any performance of Seize the Day, like, please go on YouTube it, because
with
it's
the newspapers.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Yes. And it also won Best Original Score, which is hilarious because Alan Menken won a Razzie for Newsies and then won his first Tony for the same, basically, like, umbrella of Newsies, which is crazy. But the cast features Kara Lindsay, Jeremy Jordan, original cast, Tommy Bracco, Mike Feist, Ben Fankhauser, Andrew Keenan-Bolger.
The greatest part of the filmed moment is when the other newsboys from different places come in, and the Brooklyn newsboys come in, and it's Tommy Bracco.
Tommy Bracco?
I'm like, yes! Tommy Bracco.
Also, Ben Cook is in that live production video. He's really good in that.
He's doing a lot in that live production. I was like, oh, Ben Cook.
He is doing a lot in that, specifically in King of New York. Yes. Mm. He does an entire, like, tap number with the cigar in his mouth, and I'm obsessed with it.
It's great. He's really good at that. And also, they were really young doing that show. Like, that cast of boys was so, so young. And the physicality, the athleticism, just fantastic. I think in the choreography, they had so much fun kind of being, like, telling those boys, like, show us what you got, show us what you can do, we'll put it in the show. And they just played around and did so much with it. I think King of New York, Seize the Day, sorry, with the newspapers, King of New York, the tap number. I am really partial to Carrying the Banner. And I'll find the
Newsies on a mission, kill the competition, sell the next.
The way it builds, especially on the cast recording, because in the movie that I watched yesterday, it's split into a bunch of different chunks, but the way on the cast recording, it kind of just, like, builds and keeps getting more and more exciting. Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a song that we had touched on very briefly in a couple episodes ago, Watch What Happens, is one of the greatest, like, songs that was written for stage for this movie. This movie.
Wasn't
ever
in the movie.
But all I know is nothing happens if you just give in. It can't be any worse than how it's been. And it just so happens that we just might win. So whatever happens, let's begin.
I mean, also, like, the performance that Kara Lindsay gives is everything, but it's just such a great song. And I mean, also, like, we have to talk about Jeremy Jordan, because I think that this was obviously, like, his biggest performance to date. And
well, that was his breakout year, because Bonnie and Clyde obviously closed earlier that year, which opened him up to be able to do Newsies. If Bonnie and Clyde had run, he wouldn't have been able to do Jack in Newsies.
I saw an interview with Matt Doyle, who I believe was I think he was auditioning for Davey in the Out of Town, but also potentially Jack. Maybe both. He might have been doing both.
Sure.
And when he did the reading for Paper Mill, Santa Fe had the ending note that Christian Bale takes, which is like,
nothing.
Stays on the same line. And he said that he had not, like, revisited any of the Newsies music until he went to opening night. And when Jeremy Jordan hit that final note in Santa Fe, he was like, are you kidding me? Like, who can go after you and do this? No one can hit that note. Why are you hitting that note?
No.
There's an amazing tweet that someone asked Jeremy Jordan, how do you hit that note? And his response was, you take off the hat.
You take off the hat.
I got nothing.
Newsboy hat, unlike the cowboy hat Christian Bale is wearing for a lot of that movie. I don't understand. On his back too.
Yeah,
I mean on his head for a lot of it. Yeah, but the hat.
There are many great songs in that musical. I agree. I think like King of New York, amazing. Seize the Day, mm-hmm. amazing. Watch What Happens, amazing. I love Santa Fe. I also love The World. Is it called The World Will Know? I think that's what it's called. Yeah,
Pulitzer Mayo in the world, but
it's just like it's really exciting when you have seen many musicals where the ensemble is like mixed male and female, but to see like a boys only show is really exciting.
There is something about these like boys probably age 16 to 25 just going nuts on stage.
And like it's so really hard. They're going so hard and it's like it's earned at the end of the day. And it's interesting because like I feel like the fanzies, which is like the fan group, what they call themselves, are still really strong and prevalent today. Like, I posted a random TikTok that got like 22,000 views, and like, we aren't even in it. So,
the poor guy's head is spinning, okay?
Vocal performance of his life, Ben Fankhauser, in this musical.
Go and look it up, the poor guy's head is spinning.
Wow.
The poor guy's head is spinning. This is, again, back to the movie, but I was really into the Davey from the movie. He was cute to me.
Who was it? Do you know?
No, I don't. But he was really cute to me.
I mean, Ben Fankhauser also super cute.
Cute. But no guy from the movie, okay? He was no guy from the movie.
I would actually love to know, because I think that it's kind of like a universally timeless story, obviously, because it's the movie was what, like, what's the time period? 18-something?
1899.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's already, like, when the movie came out, this was something
almost 100
that happened
years
in the past.
Later. Yeah.
But I think Newsies could be revived.
On Broadway?
Yeah, or maybe not, like, soon, but I think it could be.
I think it's a really fun show, and I remember hearing the story of them, because people had loved, that was such a cult favorite movie, a lot of schools were doing kind of bootleg productions of Newsies, putting it together themselves, and Disney's like, well, why don't we have a school production to license? So that was the reason that they did the Paper Mill productions. They just kind of fleshed out the show to have a script to be able to license, and then it was so successful. They're like, maybe we have something here. Maybe we have something in Broadway. The fact that they made it without the intention of bringing it to Broadway, but it was so well done and so successful in that Paper Mill production that they were able to bring it to Broadway is like such a fantastic thing.
The next two movies were Alan Menken's collaboration with Stephen Schwartz for Pocahontas and the Hunchback, which you can hear all about that in our Stephen Schwartz episode. But I do want to point out that Alan Menken said that the Hunchback is his favorite of all of these.
Oh, really?
The score is his favorite. Yeah.
There is something about it.
It's different from the other Disney. I mean, the bells, which we had talked about in that Stephen Schwartz episode, there's really no other score that features that sort of tone. It's also pretty dark. Quasimodo is a darker character than
for sure.
I mean, the Beast is dark, but like not, it's not relatable to me. It's not comparable. So I love the music from The Hunchback. I think he's working on trying to do a live action Hunchback. I think that's rumored.
That sounds right. I mean, they had the stage production a few years ago, not a few years ago, a little bit longer than that now. So they have that cast recording, but it doesn't seem like it ever went beyond that stage-wise.
Yeah. And then Pocahontas, obviously we love some of those songs. Those are Oscar-winning songs.
Did you know Christian Bale did a voice in Pocahontas?
No, I can't believe he came back to Disney after he came back. Trauma.
I don't know if he got to sing or anything. He was just one of the other white men in the show.
But interesting.
I do. There's something about the Pocahontas music. I mean, we've talked about Colors of the Wind. I don't know. I just can't. That song is timeless to me. Colors of the Wind.
And then was Hercules next?
Hercules was 1997, and this was with David Zippel. The song I want to show from Hercules is Zero to Hero, because the kind of like the music,
bless my soul,
the way that they're animated, crazy.
Did you know that LaShawn's is a muse?
I did. I learned that on the Blank Check podcast. I was like, I didn't even know this. This is amazing.
I learned this yesterday. Hercules is a movie that I have not seen, but crazy. I will say, when we were at Magic Kingdom for Happily Ever After, and the beginning of Go the Distance started playing, the cheers that rang through the park.
It's like, It was amazing.
I am on my way. I can go the distance. I don't care how far. Somehow I'll be strong. I know every mile will be worth my while. I would go most anywhere to find where I belong.
Yeah, I think that is, first of all, Go the Distance. What an amazing song. Mm-hmm. A song that lives outside of the movie. Do you know what it lost to at the Oscars?
Oh my God, no, I don't. Something bad.
No, something amazing.
My Heart Will Go On? My Heart Will Go
On. Yes.
1997, I should have known.
Which, like, wow. Those two songs up against each other? It's hard.
That's a hard decision.
I had read that Go the Distance was written for Michael Bolton's voice, which is kind of interesting to me.
Well, he does get to do it in the credits. He gets that, yeah. A couple years ago, 2019 maybe, the public theater did it in Central Park as part of their public works program. Jelani Aladdin, Chris Rodriguez, a lot of fun, cool people were in it. I think Roger Bart played Hades, which is really cool. I know we talked about Jafar, amazing, Ursula, amazing. Hades did that. I love his blue flames, amazing. And I think there was talks of trying to transfer it or move it forward or do something with it. And I hope they do, because I thought that was a really cool version of it.
Well, I also remember how difficult it was to get those tickets. I mean, obviously those performances are lottery only, but people were basically sleeping on the streets to try and get these lottery tickets. It seems to be super universally loved. I think Jelani is such a great casting for Hercules. We've talked about how much we adore his voice on previous episodes, but and Chris Rodriguez's Meg is also really good. So
yes, and I like the way that they dressed them. I think she was in a purple leather jacket instead of the dress, and he was in his toga, but sneakers. The vibe of it was cool. And I think. And I think that maybe translates animation better on stage than trying to make the costume look exactly like it did in the movie.
Yeah. Am I also right in saying that the public theater performances features volunteers from different theater companies?
I believe you're right. I believe it's from different boroughs of New York.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of different performers.
So that's really fun too, that they got to do that. And I mean, the public performances, there weren't very many of them, but yes, it was very critically acclaimed, and there were many people campaigning for that transfer. And I do agree that if Disney Theatrical is looking for a property to put on stage next, Hercules might be the one to do. We're just going to skip a few years here, as we did in our Stephen Schwartz episode, to the ones that we are most familiar with. So the next one on the list is Enchanted, which again, we did talk more about in that episode. But that, again, to me, same thing. Super bright, floaty, airy, great melodies, super fun score. And in between the time that we recorded Stephen Schwartz and now, the second Enchanted has been confirmed. It was rumored.
Disenchanted is happening.
I'm pretty sure they announced it at a D23 summit or one of those things. I think it is happening.
Amy Adams
is doing it.
Amy Adams is such a versatile actress. She can do anything, this girl.
She really
can. The way she is in Hillbilly Elegy and also Enchanted, okay? To be honest, I've seen Amy Adams in many things, but her performance in Enchanted is so grounded while also being crazy.
I truly love this movie. I think it's fantastic.
Another one we did at camp.
Speaking of doing Enchanted at camp, one of the songs that we added was actually from the next movie that we're going to talk about, and that's Tangled. I think when Tangled came out, it kind of like switched gears, and it was like, okay, we're back to the good old Disney days. This movie is really great. Mandy Moore, Zachary Levi, great.
Donna Murphy, as we discussed.
Donna Murphy.
Tangled is one of the first Disney princess movies that is computer animated versus hand-drawn. So that's kind of like a different... It just has a different visual look. Whereas I think they went back to, for Princess of the Frog, which is not Alan Menken, but they went back to hand-drawn animation for that. I think I prefer the hand-drawn animation, but I do think Tangled is great. The music in Tangled, At Last I See the Light.
I See the Light with the lantern. Such a beautiful, beautiful song. I really love that song.
And at last I see the light.
That's one of those ones where it's like, Rapunzel, the lanterns are for you. Like, you don't even know they're for you. Oh, can't handle it.
I mean, I also love When Will My Life Begin and When Will My Life Begin Reprise. Those songs are just like really cute. And then like, we need to give it up for Donna Murphy and Mother Knows Best, because that is such a great song.
The villain songs in these things.
Yeah.
Unmatched.
It's true. Truly unmatched. But yeah, there's also, I mean, it's on Disney's official YouTube page. I have not seen it, but it is on my list of things to watch. There is Tangled from the Disney Cruise Lines, and I've heard it's really good. It's like a really great production. So I will watch that one day and probably report back in an absence. I think that ends our Disney era, yeah?
It kind of does. And then, you know, Alan's also done some theater. I don't know if he's ever quite had an original theater hit.
I think it's like he still has some life to live, and I think that could come. I know that he's currently working on a Night at the Museum musical, which sounds pretty awesome to me.
That would be cool. I would be interested. Did I watch the whole Stars in the House Night at the Museum reunion? I definitely did.
What a random one to turn on.
It was a really random one to turn on. I was just kind of like, I need background noise. So here I am watching Owen Wilson talk about, I don't know, whatever he talks about.
We talk about this every single time we talk about Stars in the House, but like to think of Seth Rudetsky's contact list just blows my mind.
Texting these people.
Yeah. So one of the musicals that was on Broadway, I mean, it started in the West End, and it is supposed to go back to the West End, but not with Whoopi anymore,
right,
depending on when the West End reopens, is Sister Act, which obviously Sister Act and Sister Act 2, iconic movies. I actually think Sister Act 2 is better than Sister Act 1.
Can I make a confession? I have never seen Sister Act 1 or 2.
Oh my God, Steph. But you love Whoopi.
I do love Whoopi. Ghost is one of my faves. But I have never seen any of the Sister Act movies. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I have seen both movies, and I also saw the musical because it came 1 year to Toronto as part of a season. I don't think the musical is fantastic. However, I will say that there are a couple amazing songs, and on Broadway, we know how we feel about the legendary Patina Miller, who plays the lead. And Fabulous Baby is such a fun song. And again, I will put this in the description for our YouTube listeners, but the Tony performance of Raise Your Voice is literally like nothing else. Watching Patina just like having the time of her life during this performance is so fun. I think the music is like, it's gospel music, which is interesting because I think like obviously in comparison to his other works, Hercules is pretty gospel sounding. So,
and we'll talk about Leap of Faith. Influences. We'll talk about Leap of Faith briefly, but that also kind of has a similar gospel influence.
Yes. So Sister Act, I don't think did as well on Broadway as it has done in the West End, but it's fun. I think it's a fun tour show. If you're going to put a show in a season for touring, I think that it's a really good one. And those two are the standout songs for sure.
I can imagine it having really good like regional success, licensing-wise, Sister Act. Because it has that name recognition, it's great. I also wrote on their Wikipedia that they did a nun run to promote the...
yes.
So people dressed as nuns and ran through London. And
that's
I thought
really
that
fun.
Was really random and interesting.
But like,
okay.
What? That's great promo.
It was great promo, I'm sure. It's really funny.
And then, as you just said, like, gospel musical, another Alan Menken, Glenn Slater project.
Yeah.
Leap of Faith.
The Sister Act was a Glenn Slater, Leap of Faith a Glenn Slater as well. I listened to a few songs from Leap of Faith. I also watched the video. Can I tell the story about how the time changed last night? So this is me. It was like... 1:55 a.m. Why was I awake? It's the time change weekend. I'm watching this 5-minute clip of Leap of Faith. Just watching it. I'm like, oh God. And then I look at the clock when it's over and it's 3:00 something. And I'm like, have I been watching this for an hour? Turns out the time changed.
But I said to you before we recorded that 5-minute video like kind of felt like it was
an hour long. I mean, I love Raul Esparza. He has amazing voice.
There was a
very
great cast in that show.
Yeah.
Leslie Odom Jr. was in it. Kendrick Crossbum was in it.
Jessica Phillips. The song I want to shout out is the Leslie Odom Jr. kind of big number, which is called Dancing in the Devil's Shoes. I think that's like, I mean, you can't go wrong with the smooth voice of Leslie Odom Jr.
No, but I just have a question in terms of this show, because this was around the same time that Smash came out, and I really want to know if Leap of Faith made it into his bio.
Right, because Smash obviously didn't make it into his bio. Okay.
Yeah.
But this is a good question. Leslie, what are you claiming? What are you not claiming?
I also listened to a couple songs from Leap of Faith. As I said, this show did not have very much success. It actually did not have good critic reviews either. It opened April 26th and closed May 13th to 24 previews, 20 performances. And it... randomly was nominated for Best Musical that year, so...
But only Best Musical, no other nominations, only Best Musical.
Leap of Faith and Newsies were nominated for Best Musical at the same time.
Oh, so then that makes sense that why... So it was like the year of Once then.
Yes, Once won for Best Musical. And wow, what a tough category for
Best
Leading
Score.
Actor in a Musical.
Well,
Steve Kazee, as we know, won. Danny Burstein for Follies, Jeremy Jordan for Newsies,
amazing.
Norm Lewis for Porgy and Bess, and Ron Raines for Follies. So, sorry, Raul, but like you were pushed out by the two Follies performances, I believe.
Crazy.
I can believe that Steve Kazee won that year, but we watched that Follies bootleg, and Danny Burstein slays.
He does, but there was something about Once.
Oh my God, Steph, this was also the same year as Peter and the Starcatcher.
I know, because we tried to see Once on Broadway, but they didn't have any more tickets left, so we saw Peter and the Starcatcher again instead. Not again.
Which, like,
we saw Peter and the Starcatcher instead, which was the greatest decision ever. It was a gift, because Peter and the Starcatcher, something I think about all the time. Great, great theater.
Okay, so that year... Yeah, I guess, like, no one cared about Leap of Faith because, like, who cared about Leap of Faith in that year?
That was also One Man, Two Governors that year, which was a play, but starring James Corden. It's the reason we have James Corden. You can't... Not everything is good, okay?
Actually, I need to, like, expose myself because I had this conversation at dinner recently. I went to the Toronto TIFF premiere, not the movie. I literally went to the red carpet of whatever that movie was called, One Day, One Chance, One Chance. That James Corden was in and Taylor Swift did a song for. And I literally went to the red carpet to try and meet Taylor Swift, but instead got a selfie with James Corden.
And... Pop it up on the screen in the YouTube video right now.
I will. It's really blurry. But Corey the other day was like, you need to delete that picture after everything that you've said.
Yeah, we can't delete
there,
it. It's important.
There was a time in my life when it was exciting to meet James Corden. Honestly, I feel like if I met him now, I would still ask for something.
You know.
Yeah. I can't believe that was... Wow, what a great year, the 2012 Tony Awards.
It was a good year. It was a really good year.
It was... Once, obviously... Oh my God, that was also the year that, like, Laura Osnes was nominated for Bonnie and Clyde, because Bonnie and Clyde and Newsies were at the same time.
Right.
There were so many overlapping... Like, Jeremy overlapped two things there. Alan Menken overlapped two things there. Crazy. Mm-hmm. What a time.
That's so funny. And then kind of his last Broadway show that wasn't, you know, a Disney thing was A Bronx Tale. I'm not really familiar with this cast recording, but it did run for like 2 years. The most interesting fun fact about this to me was that it was co-directed by Jerry Zaks and Robert De Niro.
Icons, both.
And I don't know which one is more iconic, but so funny to think of Robert De Niro doing this.
I think they're both iconic in their own right. Yeah. It's kind of like bringing together like the king of Broadway and the king of Hollywood. And it also featured the late Nick Cordero. This was obviously a performance that I think like his name was talked about a lot during this show in general. But yeah, I'm also not familiar with A Bronx Tale.
No. I mean, it's I think it's a story about immigrating from Italy to America, or like being Italian American, which we're always there for. But Nick Cordero, Bobby Conte Thornton, Chaz Palminteri came in because it was his life story. It's, you know, Ariana DeBose, fun stuff.
Is that it? I think that's it.
I think that's it. There's one television show that he was involved in that I'm going to talk about for 5 seconds, and it's called Gallivant. Guys, Gallivant was it. It was just so funny. It was kind of like medieval, like royalty peasant musical comedy.
Amazing.
Kind of like Monty Python inspired. Every episode would start with like a musical recap. It was like just really funny. Really funny. Half hour episodes. You know, he's worked on a lot of TV as well. Like he did some Sesame Street starting out. He's done some stuff for that Central Park show on Apple TV.
And you this know. Tangled, the Tangled series, which I think season 3 had ended in March, like a year ago, basically now. Tons of music. Jeremy Jordan's in that. Enon Espinosa's in that. Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi like reprise their roles. But there's 3 full seasons of that show. So it is interesting to me that like Tangled, the storyline itself and those characters like hit with the little kids, because this is totally like a little kid's show.
Yeah.
And the chameleon, Pascal, he's in it too.
Pascal. What about the horse? What's the horse's name?
Oh, I really don't know, but I like the horse chameleon.
The chameleon, such a cutie. That's like merchandise. That's like a character created so they can sell toys. But we love him anyway. You know, Alan Menken's career is so tied up with Disney and the evolution of Disney throughout the past 30 years, basically. From Little Mermaid in 1989 to now, even. He's still collaborating with Disney, still writing stuff for Disney. If he's working on Disenchanted, they're doing an Aladdin sequel. He's still involved in the company. And to think, you know, it was kind of Howard Ashman was being like, yeah, I'll bring Alan with me. And to create this, like, lifelong collaboration. And to have his music in our homes for, again, 30 years. It's really magical.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm so interested to see what he creates next. And I would love to see him work on a new original animated, because I think some of the new animated stuff is really good and they're really like pushing the limits of what they can do. Like to think about the animation evolution is a whole episode in itself, honestly. Like it's so crazy what's been able to happen. So I would love to see his name appear on some of these recent ones. And like I said, I can't wait for Night at the Museum on Broadway.
Okay, how do we think this will happen? Like, what do you think? It's gonna be like an immersive thing? How do we do the tiny things and the like big things?
The only thing that I can compare these like statues to is the Lightning Thief and also Mary Poppins on stage. They sort of do these like statue moving things, but immersive would be really cool.
Yeah, like walk, the lobby is like a museum and you have like displays of things.
Yeah.
And then when you go into the theater, like that's what comes to life.
Starring Ben Stiller, of course.
yeah. He's going to come to Broadway for this, make his debut.
That wraps up our episode on Alan Menken, and it is now time for our obsession of the week.
This is an obsession I've been saving for a while, but I really feel like this is the perfect week for it, and it is because it is an Alan Menken written song that I discovered randomly. There is a ride in Tokyo DisneySea. It's called Sinbad's Storybook Adventure.
Not to be mistaken with the Sinbad at Universal Studios.
Very different. Very different characters. Completely unrelated. But at Tokyo DisneySea, there's a ride called Sinbad Storybook Adventure. It's not really based on a movie. It's based on, like, a real person, legend. I don't know. Okay. Sinbad. And there's this song that is written by Alan Menken that plays throughout the entire ride. And it's mostly in Japanese, obviously, except for the chorus, which says, the song is called Compass of Your Heart. And I, like, watched a ride through of it. And you're just, like, you're just immediately on the side of Sinbad because of the music. You're like, what is this song? I can't believe what I'm hearing. And because it's not an existing character, so they have to make you fall in love with this character, with the story, in this, like, 6-minute ride. And it is the music that takes you on the journey. And it's like, who wrote this? What is the song? And then when you find out it's Alan Menken, you're like, this makes 100% complete sense. So my obsession this week is the song Compass of Your Heart from the Tokyo DisneySea ride called Sinbad's Storybook Adventure.
Amazing. I'm going to watch the ride through right after this.
Please do.
Something also that you guys don't know about us, but Steph and I love watching Disney ride throughs, like really love watching Disney ride throughs. If you have not seen, this is unrelated, but it's Disney related. If you have not seen the Pirates of the Caribbean Shanghai Disney ride through, stop what you're doing and watch it right now.
Completely. Yes.
We were talking about this yesterday. I was like, I really don't have anything right now. And then I realized I actually do have things. And this is the one that I have also been saving for a really long time. And I feel like this is the perfect episode for it. So I'm pretty sure this was the very, very first Broadway Princess Party, which was created by Laura Osnes and Ben Ruhala. And they've obviously been doing this Princess Party for years. This video is, I believe, from 2017. It is Laura, Taylor Lauterman, and Desi Oakley singing a medley of Broadway Princess songs. It's so good. And if we are going to talk about casting, like, a Tangled on stage, I think Taylor Lauterman would be an amazing Rapunzel. And she, I think it was the same Princess Party, she sang I See the Light with Derek Lenna, who was obviously Flynn Rider. Like, there is no one better than Derek Lenna as Flynn Rider. But yeah, they sing, like, Impossible from the Brandy Cinderella. They sang Colors of the Wind. They sang, oh my God, what's the song from Moana called again?
How Far I'll Go.
How Far I'll Go? Yes. Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast. So it's just like this amazing medley, but the end is so good. And the thing that I love about this is that they'll end on like a word and then the next person will pick up a different song that has that same word.
Oh, wow.
And the best part is when Desi Oakley sings the end of Colors of the Wind and Taylor Lauterman goes into Wind in the Hair on My Sea. It's so good. And then they go into Let It Go and they do this like amazing 3-part harmony on Let It Go and the song ends on Impossible. And I used to watch this video daily when it came out. I still think like 54 Below Princess Party would be so much fun. And I've never been in New York during the time when there was a Princess Party. I also feel like to get tickets to those are pretty difficult now because anybody could show up, like at any moment, anybody could show up at those princess parties. But yeah, I used to be so obsessed with this video. And I had sent you a video, this was not from a princess party, but you watched it yesterday as well, of Laura Osnes and Bonnie Milligan also doing like a Disney princess medley. There's something about these like princess medleys that just are so good. And yeah, I love to hear these songs together because you actually hear the similarities in the musicality of it, which I love and is interesting to me. So that's my obsession this week. This is a video from, I think, 2017. I'll put it in the description, but also enjoy this clip if you were listening on audio.
We need to sing with all the voices of the mountain. Need to paint with all the colors of the wind.
My hair on the sea stays behind me.
Go!
wraps up our episode. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you are looking to start your own podcast and you don't know where to host, we use Podbean. It's super convenient. It is the hosting service that is easy, affordable, and offers simple publishing. And if you sign up using www.podbean.com/off2bway, that's with the number 2, you can get a month free. So check that out.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at off2bwaypodcast with the number 2, and let us know what your favorite Alan Menken songs are.
And if you are listening to us on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe, and we will see you guys next time.
Bye.